Ever start a new supplement and wonder, is this really working? You're not alone. Most supplements aren't easily absorbed, which means your body might not be getting the nutrients it needs. Symbiotica takes a different approach, with formulas designed for maximum absorption. Favorites, like their liposomal vitamin C, support a strong immune system and boost natural collagen production. And their newest standout, liquid colostrum, is essential for a healthy gut, packed with nutrients that soothe and restore the gut lining. Symbiotica's clean, bioavailable supplements help your body actually use what you take, delivering real results. And with a monthly subscription, it's easy to stay consistent. Symbiotica makes wellness simple. Ready to feel the difference? Go to Symbiotica.com and use code START for 20% off. That's Symbiotica.com, code START.
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hey everyone, welcome into Attack and Ferret presented by Tylenol, the official pain reliever of the NWSL. We've got Lori Lindsay, Jen Beatty in the house. I'm Darian Jenkins. We have a very fun show for you. We are talking more transfer news because it's nonstop. We are taking a preview of match week 13, and we are speaking with a very, very special guest, Rebecca Smith, former New Zealand captain and founder and CEO of Crux Football, is joining the pod late. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us, whether you're here on YouTube or on GolazoNet or listening as a podcast. We appreciate it so much. Tell your friends about us, get in the comments, and let us know what is going on. All right, everybody, we're coming fresh off of the Queen's Classic last night. They sold out crowd. 42,175 fans came to Citi Field in Queens and showed out. And Lori, this kind of makes me laugh because it's incredible that it was at a baseball stadium. Jen, you got to play at a baseball stadium when you were with Bay, which is amazing. But when you think about the jump from Lori when you were playing on baseball pitches to now, how incredible is that to see the difference in how much the league has grown?
Yeah, because there's 42,000 fans as well. I saw some clip, but I don't know. Actually, every time I'm on the spot, I bring up Al. But it was, she was talking about her scoring one of her only goals in the BSL, and it was like in front of like two fans. But that's what I felt like. It was like two fans and parents and dogs.
Hey, so they loved it.
Yeah, quite the difference. Watching that game last night, though, I was just like, it's just awesome, right? It's awesome. Exactly the type of fans that you want to be playing in front of that many, and just such a fun event.
Yeah. Jen, you said you played at the Cub Stadium, right, when you were at Bay?
We did. It was amazing. It was so cool. It was obviously it's an iconic stadium in its own right, and I think the crossover it was Wrigley Field, and that's where we played for Bay FC, and it was just really cool. I'd been to a baseball match once before that. I think it was the Padres down in San Diego. So I guess just to have that other fixture somewhere different and it bring a potentially a different crowd, mm-hmm. It was just a really cool experience. I remember, I wouldn't say steal because I asked them, but I took away a baseball and got like the team to sign it. So it's a little, yeah, I didn't say showing the Scottish in me, trying to take away something free. Should have put a traffic cone out there and really shown the true Scots side. But yeah, it was awesome. So it's really cool to to see it again last night and again making history. But Darian, how was it? You were actually there. You were living in it and did an awesome
I was
job.
There.
How was it?
It was amazing. I was boots on the ground. Me, Lisa, shout out to our producer, Audrey and Phil were also there. It was incredible. Like the amount of fans, even on my commute there, because I live in New York, seeing everybody, the train completely full, like Manhattan full at 6 p.m. commuting home, that type of full, going to Citi Field to go watch a match between Washington Spirit and Gotham. It was just sick. And it was an energetic crowd. It was so fun. It felt like this is what women's soccer deserves. And it felt like a very New York City open arms, like, hey, welcome. Like it made me so excited for when Gotham moves to the Etihad. Yeah.
That was my next question. Do you think it's like a taste of what's to come for them?
Yeah, 100%. And I think it brought in so many new fans as well that were just like excited to have it so much more accessible as well in New York. It's easy to get in and out of. It's the full experience you want going to a game. So it was a great prelude. And actually, Lisa and I got to interview Yael, and she talked to us a little bit about, you know, being one of the founding members of the league and now a president of Gotham and how she kind of came to this.
Yael, you're one of the founding members of the NWSL. Like, you are what this league has built upon of your shoulders. And I don't think that's highlighted enough around you and truly moving into a front office position. But how much does it mean to you as a retired player of this league and the national team to then be the force creating an environment like this and truly pushing the game forward?
Well, I so appreciate that. I'll be honest, I was emotional on the drive here. And what I think about quite often is when I grew up playing soccer in New Jersey and I was training really hard to play on the biggest stage of the women's game at the time, this is what I dreamed of. But that wasn't the reality. That wasn't even close. And I started to believe that maybe it wasn't possible. And I think being able to stay involved in the game and alongside such amazing people, you guys included, who are pushing this forward, to see this come to fruition and to make this the norm. I get the chills thinking about it because this is what the game has always deserved. Like, this is women's soccer, and this is how people will know women's soccer moving forward.
Lori, what'd you think of Yael saying that?
Yeah, it's spot on. And I just got chills hearing her say that. Cause I mean, we've been saying that for so long, right? And I think all of us who've been in the game for such a long time and seen it through the three iterations of the leagues, different leagues, and then to where, even just talking about the baseball fields, and we laugh, right? Because it's just like, it's more like laugh or you're gonna be crying. But also it just is showing the progress and the investment. And it's just incredible. And it was, and Yael, to you, the question that you asked her, Dee, was just all about, you know, she knows firsthand where this league has been and now in the front office, and for her to be able to see it on a daily basis and help make this happen is huge. And it's why we're all in it, because we love the sport.
Yeah, I love that we've all also stayed around it. Just, it's such a big marker of growth. Jen, I loved hearing about your experience playing on a baseball pitch, but we also got to talk to Guru Wrighton, who it was also her first time in a baseball stadium, let alone playing on a pitch. So let's hear what she had to say.
Gotham defender Guru Wrighton after an incredible game here at Citi Field for Gotham. Have you been to a baseball stadium before?
Never.
Let alone played in one.
Never.
Yeah,
yeah,
well, welcome.
No, thank you. This was amazing. The pitch is big. It was incredible, the fans, that, you know, when you play a game and you prepare for it, you try to avoid looking up to see everyone, you just focus on your job. But throughout the game, it was incredible.
So cool. I mean, it massively resonates, doesn't it? Like, her, just the newness of it. And I think if you've played the majority of your career in Europe or in England specifically, it's such a new experience, right? You might never have stepped foot in much else rather than a football stadium, especially not baseball. It's not, you know, hugely popular in England. We've surely been in London for a long time. So seeing her excitement, you can really see it. So great interview, guys. Well done. Well done.
Thank you. I appreciate that. She was so lovely, by the way. That was my first time speaking with her. Can't wait to interview her in the future. But Gotham take over Washington Spirit in the first installation of the Queen's Classic at Citi Field. But the King's Classic is Sunday night. Men's World Cup final. We have Spain and Argentina in the final. The reigning champions going against the Spanish giants. Before we move on into NWSL, Lori, who's your pick for Sunday? And give us a score prediction.
Okay. I always want to vomit when it comes to these predictions because I'm like, I could see this going. Because partially because I'm looking at the Spain team and I'm like, that was incredible against France. I mean, all of us had France. Well, at least I can't speak to Jen, but Dee, you and I did. Yeah. And the podcast that we were on didn't age well at all. In fact, it like fell short quickly. But I don't know. I just think when you look at teams in the collective, the Spain team has it all, and how they nullified the France attack, which I thought was actually impossible. They did with just the utmost ability in terms of just like everybody playing a part. But I do think in terms of these moments, an X factor is so real. And when you look at Messi and what he does for this Argentinian team, it is extraordinary. I mean, they keep doing it, whether they're in extra time, whether in regulation, and just finding ways. And he's at the heart of all of it. So I'm having a hard time trying to figure out a prediction because I want to say Spain when I think about like how they've only conceded one goal and how I feel like that they are going to control the tempo of this game. But it is hard to bet against Messi at this point in time, and to go back to back, it's like, my goodness. Kind of want to puke. I'm going just because I just like, I love it so much. I'm not going to bet against Messi in this instance, and I'm going to go 2-1 Argentina.
Ooh.
But I don't like, honestly, side note, I think Spain's going to win 2-1.
You're going either way.
Yeah. It's going to be 2-1. Someone's going to win though.
Yeah, so somebody eventually.
Someone's going to win. That is what we can say. Someone.
Yes. Jay Bizzle, who do you got?
I think I'm going with Spain. I think the way that they nullified France's attack, like France were my favorites, openly said that numerous times, and the way that they kind of controlled the spaces, controlled the ball, transitions to defense were absolutely brilliant. And I feel like it's going to be a game of moments though, right? Argentina have cancelled out so many teams by a moment through Messi, the magician. So hard to judge and can't write off either, but I'm still going with Spain from a respect from defensive side of stuff. True.
I'm rocking with Spain too. Yeah. I'm rocking with Spain too. I think Cubarsí has been incredible. Oh, like Rodri's been incredible. Like, that team's spine is so strong. Argentina hasn't played a team that I think is on par with how good defensively they can be. Like kind of that aggression, never say die. So I'm rocking with Spain. I am also going to go 2-1 though, but with the Spaniards. We'll see. Those are our predictions for the World Cup. Let's get back to women's soccer. No more men here. What's a man doing here? All right. Big news. Mapi Leon and Diani Katiototo are moving to London City Lionesses. Jen, you broke the news of Alexi Putellas and Michelle Kang, and they kind of alluded there was more signings coming your way. Did you ever think that Diani was going to be the player to be signed to London City?
No, I didn't. And I think that's what was so exciting about those kind of conversations around that were swirling even on that day. We all knew that Mapi Leon was close to being announced. That was kind of the secret that was not kept well. But I did not expect Gianni to be going there. I think it's almost like no surprise that you hear another massive name going to London City Lionesses because of the investment. But I talk about, you know, Pateas and Mapi Leon being that kind of spine of the team, and then you go and sign one of the best 1v1 wingers. So the team is just getting stronger and stronger. I cannot wait to see the fixtures to be announced for the WSL. I think that's going to happen very soon. So we'll see who they match up in the opening weekend. But we're getting close to it. It's not that far off now, and World Cup's almost done. So, but yeah, another huge signing. She's a phenomenal player. Someone who I think missed out on the Champions League final, was a big loss in that sense. So I'm excited to see what she can do in England.
Lori, what do you think Diani adds to this team? It feels like they've added a lot to bolster their roster, but a player like her that is so good in the attack, so good 1v1, also a great defensive forward, I think. Like, How much of a level up is this for London City that I think we all said they're going to be at the top of the table? And then you keep adding her?
Yeah, I think it just says what Michelle Kang has been eyeing all along. Let's just get the best players, right? She is ambitious. We've seen that with the Washington Spirit. We've seen that with Lyon. So in terms of the caliber, it's not surprising, but I think we're going to see, yeah, I think anytime you're bringing on somebody that is excellent in 1v1 situations, but also combined, just adds another level of excellence in the attack, because then it can hurt you in different ways, right? You can pass, you can combine, you can keep possession. But I feel like in the women's game, that is the exception, like, that is another level in terms of being able to take on 1v1 and taking a team and saying, like, listen, okay, a team is sitting back, there's not a ton of space, fine. Then I can take on 1v1 and hurt you in different ways.
Well, that is a really interesting point though, Laurie, because if you are in a team, say if a Gianni goes and signs for a team like Chelsea or an Arsenal or a Man City for sure, she will be up against a low block the majority of her season. A London City lioness is when you're still trying to climb. Teams are going to high press you. She's going to have a lot more space playing for a team like London City lionesses. Yeah. So I'm really excited for that aspect. Again, so different. Sorry for that appearance in the background there.
I love the cameos we're getting.
I'm in an airport, everyone, okay? So that's a really interesting, like, football factor of going to a team. If you are a forward player like London City, you might get more of those attacking situations that are much more open in comparison to going for a team that's more solidified in a top three, hypothetically.
I love that. What a great analysis, Jen. Great, great point. I can't wait to see her and just what this team does. Like, we see Diani and Alexis Putellas on the same team. I that was not on my vision board for 2026-2027 season. But I'm here for it.
When you list off those names, everyone might play a low block against them.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The first game, maybe not.
It might totally shift based on the amount of players they've just signed, so...
I still think that skill set is going to be so necessary, low block or not, right? You're going to have to move it. You're going to and then get her isolated in ways that you can. So, yeah.
But huge.
Regardless, extraordinary talent, and they just keep adding, which is scary.
We'll see you in
fun.
Yeah. The next show, the next week, we'll do another.
Probably. Yeah. Before the show, we were like, where's Peruela going? We still haven't announced that. Like, they're stacked week in week. They just get more and more stacked. Yeah. Well, other big moves. Kiara Keating is going to Liverpool. That was a surprise move to me, moving over to Liverpool. And then they're also losing a player in Denise O'Sullivan going to Gotham. Mm-hmm. Laurie, how do you feel like Denise moving back to the NWSL, with Gotham, the reigning champions? I mean, how much is she going to add to a team that you're like, how are they getting more?
Yeah, like London City Lionesses of NWSL, what's happening here? No, I love Denise O'Sullivan. It's good to see her back. And clearly, I think she even said that going into this game last night, even though she wasn't eligible to play or even on the roster or team sheet. But was excited to be back, right? And the way that the team plays in terms of being able to keep possession. I think she also even mentioned what with Emily Sonnet, like they play similarly. So both of those two players, listen, if they already lead the league and like the fewest shots, I believe it again. So now you add Denise O'Sullivan, like is anybody even getting past the halfway line? But yeah, I think this just shows the ambition, right? You spoke with Yael Averbusch, where this team is headed. I mean, I wouldn't have even said they needed Denise O'Sullivan prior because you have McCaskill, you have Howell in there. But to add in her ability, and she also has the ability to get forward, which we didn't see a ton always with North Carolina because she was really the one that was tasked with kind of screening the back line. But she does have the ability to play a final pass and be a bit more of a two-way midfielder. So I'll just be curious to see exactly how they use her. And it is something that Juan Carlos Amoros has talked about consistently, though, as the game grows and there's more competitions, you have to be able to bolster your roster. Otherwise, it's too many minutes. It's too much travel within the U.S. For these players. So in that sense, also to bring in the caliber, the experience she has, and also the ability to rotate now and not lose a beat with these players, I think shows them on the forefront of what's going to be needed from these teams if you continue to win and play in more competitions. Because that's been a conversation around this Gotham team since the beginning of this season, when they didn't really have a preseason.
Yeah, I think it is.
Or an off season.
Yeah. Exactly. Both, right?
definitely great business for Gotham. A player who clearly wanted to be back in the NWSL. I will say a huge loss for Liverpool. I think she went to Liverpool in a really difficult period and absolutely elevated their game. Every game that we ever watched for Liverpool, it was O'Sullivan was making the difference of why they were doing better. But signing Kiara Keating, look, I totally get the move. I think Yamashita very much pinned down the number one shirt for Man City. Maybe people would argue a little bit more solid shot saver, maybe potentially better with their feet. So I think she just wanted to be given the chance. She's back with Gareth Taylor as well, old manager, which I think is huge when you know who you're working with. So I love that move for her just to get consistent football because she's still young and got so much talent that deserves to have that week by week minute. So credit to her for making that move. It's not easy when you've been at a club for so long and she'd been at Man City for a fair amount of years. So excited to watch her get more consistent football as well.
Yeah, that's a really good shout. Well, and really big news, the U.S. Women's National Team is playing the reigning World Cup champion Spain in October. And Jen, we know Hannah Cash is very excited about this. Potentially, we could go to the game. They're playing October 10th at Audi Field, Rowdy Audi in D.C., followed by a game on October 13th at Subaru Park in Chester, Pennsylvania. Talk about a really, really good test, especially after the Brazil friendlies played in Brazil. Now you're going against a team who are the reigning World Cup champions. They're going to provide the ultimate test. They have two Ballon d'Or winners leading their squad in the middle of the pitch. And number one and number two ranked teams in the world getting to test each other two times in a row. Like, Jen, when you look at this matchup, how good of a test is this, not just for the U.S., but also for Spain?
It's everything. You summed it up perfectly. You've got two highly ranked teams in when it comes to global football. So in a build up to the World Cup, this is exactly the kind of test that both teams would want. So it's going to be so great to watch. I hope we do. You dropped it in there that we might be going. I'm going to bang on to producers
Audrey,
now.
Producer Audrey.
I hope we do get to go down there, but no. Awesome. I genuinely feel like even if a game's a friendly now, they're still just as competitive as actual competitive games. So I'm really excited for this one. Again, I love what both teams are doing and Emma Hayes specifically, like matching up teams from all over the world, right? Because that's what you have to do when it comes to friendlies, to build yourself into different tactical games that are going to look different going into a World Cup. So I love this matchup. Incredible players on both sides. I hope we get to go.
Yeah, I would just add, you know, we saw in the last matchup with Brazil, and it always gives you a test on areas like, okay, again, to Jen's point, tactically, sometimes it's not going to look the prettiest, but what do you need to do to get wins? You get the environment of what it's going to look like in Brazil against the Brazilian team, and now you're going to be tested against Spain and their possession and what that's going to look like and how do you match up and how do you just find different ways? And I think what I love about this with Emma Hayes and saying, hey, we need to play these teams is because it's far enough out that you're going to get a good picture of areas that, okay, this is a strong suit of ours, even though you would have an idea, but these are areas that we still need to clean up. What does this look like? How do we change personnel maybe against different teams and just change a few different nuances in the sense that, okay, it's going to give you a clear picture still 8 or so months outside of the World Cup and enough leeway to be able to work on those things and get a better picture as you start to narrow down what you think you're kind of realistically what your player pool is looking like headed into that World Cup.
Well, what exactly is that? Oh my gosh. I don't know what happened. I took a swig of coffee and
please go to social, please.
No. That predictions, then that.
Whoa, I wasn't even going to say prediction. I didn't want to make you more sweaty, Lori.
I'm sweaty all the time. Oh,
please.
Okay, please cut that away from the show. Only people live saw that.
We'll just send it to Jen and I.
We're live, mate.
I was going to ask, because we saw in Brazil, the test was the physicality, the away from home. It's exactly what you're going to get in Brazil next year. And I think it was a big mental test on, can you keep your cool when you're being prodded and poked to react and be thrown off of your own game? When you look at Spain, what exactly is the test you think the U.S. is going to get out of these two Spain games?
Was that for me?
Whoever. Yeah, Jen, you go first.
I think you're talking about, I guess, like masters of the ball. You're talking about being comfortable without the ball. Spain want to dominate possession. They want to be really patient with the ball. They're so good at creating overloads and creating triangles all over the pitch. So if you try and press them, it has to be absolutely spot on because they're technically so good that they can just play through you really, really well. So I think it's about knowing spaces and time of when to jump on a press and when to be uncomfortable and getting them on transition, getting them into a comfort zone and getting them on transition, which is what the US are so, so good at. So it'll be interesting to see how the US start that game, but I think that will be the biggest test. It's you're playing against a team who is so comfortable on the ball, probably the most comfortable on the ball in the world. And that for me is a different aspect from a tactical standpoint than physicality.
Yeah, I was just thinking, it reminds me of the Euros final from last year and just what we were saying about England, which is, you said, the start of the game. I think that's going to be huge. But then also, how do you deal with the tracking of the runners, Bonmati coming out, Puteas? They'll create overloads in the wide areas and create overloads in the central areas. So the communication defensively and out of possession is massive against a Spain team. And then just dealing, how do you kind of weather some of the storms and the waves of not having possession for majority of the time? And then once you do win it, you have to be useful with the ball. And I think that is the toughest aspect, because it's like playing against Japan in the sense that they can keep the ball. And then you have to be precise with and know exactly what you want to do to be able to counter the numbers that they're going to send forward, where the space is, whether it's direct or just connecting the first pass. And I thought, even just thinking back to that final, I thought that's what England did really well. Is they at least connected that first pass, and then they went direct immediately on the second. It just gives you different elements to look at within the game, which I think is going to be such a fun tactical battle between those two.
Yeah, cannot wait to see it. A great matchup on both sides in the ultimate tests. October 10th and October 13th. Of course, we will be back on A3 to recap both of those matches. Everybody, stick with us. We are taking a quick break and then have a special interview right after. Welcome back to Attacking Third, presented by Tylenol, the official pain reliever of the NWSL. Well, I teased it. We have a special guest, former New Zealand captain and founder and CEO of Crux Football, Bex Smith, is joining the pod. So everybody give her a warm welcome in, Bex.
Hey.
There she is.
Hey. I was trying to follow what you were saying, Lori. Nope. Sorry. Too smart.
I don't know about that. Did you catch what Dee said too?
Lori, why would you do that?
Just make sure it's clipped. I just want to make sure. Because it sounds like me, I think.
It's for sure going to be. But Bex, we love when Lori like geeks out on the analysis. I always feel like I'm like learning from the queen of breakdown.
Genius. So. I agree.
It's the best.
I literally like walked into a bar to have some meetings recently, and the Men's World Cup was on. It was like this massive bar. I'm like, I know that. Who's talking? Yeah. I knew that voice. I'm like, it's Lori Lindsay. Sorry, I just swore. Sorry, it's Lori Lindsay.
We're on YouTube. You're fine.
What? I like text her. I'm like, look at you getting it. Yeah. So cool. Anyway, hi.
I need to come on the pod more just to like.
Yeah.
More. Got it.
Yeah. No, Lori crushed the World Cup. But Bex, we are so excited to speak with you. First of all, we want to get into Crux Football because everything about it is incredible. It's for the players, investing and everything. Can you tell us just like how this came to be since you retired from playing football?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I obviously played, then I worked at FIFA and I got to see the global game and then started working with some brands, like big brands and content storytelling. So I feel like I had a good picture of where the game was. And then I was seeing what was going on in the US where these clubs who had started out of nothing, no one knew the names of them. And they were all of a sudden going from valuations from negative into like 300 million and had amazing crowds and cool merch. And it was just like this huge wave. And I just thought, that's so weird. You know, I've been in Europe for 20 something years. I know you guys played there as well. Also in France, nice one. And I was like, we've got such good players. We've got amazing leagues. We have huge names, big brand names. And yet we still can't get people to the matches. We don't have the right merch. Like everything just feels kind of stuck in the dark ages. And it just kind of dawned on me that the structures are just wrong for the women's game in Europe. You know, they're stuck in the men's clubs. They get 5 to 10% of the attention and resources because they're seen as a cost center and a massive cash cow where everyone's focus is the men's team. And like, how are you ever going to be able to focus on a business when it's stuck inside something else? So it's really not rocket science. I was like, we just pull them out. We've seen Michelle King do it. We've seen Mercury 13 do it. I knew there was other clubs that were doing it, and find the right clubs. That's a key. The ones that have, you know, good history and a great place and an awesome opportunity to build fan bases, and then try to build something that really feels synergistic where there's real economies of scale from like the Crux level. And that was the start of it, really. It was just like, I think there's just better structures out there. And I hope everyone follows us and copies us, because I think the whole structure of the game just needs to totally change. So just like a little mission, you know?
Just a little one.
She's already dropping bars and she's only on the first question, Bex.
Right?
Great interview.
Yeah, I'm like,
back to Lori.
Lori, can I ask you a question? Permission to ask a question? I wanted to ask on like the projects you have done, because you've built so much experience since stopping playing. What kind of have you taken from all of those projects and learned that kind of set you up into, okay, I want to do this kind of business. This is the space I want to be in now.
I mean, it's a great question. I think I was trying to figure out how I could have the most impact and where like my expertise and maybe the black book and experience could drive the biggest growth in the game. And I like from FIFA, you get to see how the world is governed by football. I mean, you've seen it recently and it's good and bad ways, I guess. But it is interesting to understand sort of how governance works in football. And I remember when I first got there, I went to a team arrival meeting. It was for an under 17 tournament. And I walked in and like all the girls in one of the teams were like laughing and joking. And we were talking to their team and then all the staff in the team. It was like this super diverse team. And then I walked into this other team arrival meeting and the girls were just like really quiet, all kind of sitting there, and they didn't look very comfortable. And it was like all dudes in the whole technical staff. So like no one in their medical staff, no one in their coach, it was all men. And these girls were from a European team that was playing in Costa Rica at the time. And I just thought, shoot, that's so hardcore. Imagine if you're like a 15-year-old girl and something, you know. So we changed the regulations. We got one female coach and one female in the medical staff and the under 17s. It took me a year and a half to pass through all the committees. But then once we did, it sort of had that filter down effect into under 20 and the Women's World Cup. And now I think there's a lot more women sort of in football more globally as well. So you can make change, but it's just really slow. And I think that the biggest opportunity for growth in the women's game right now is in club, you know, like that's where the players are developed. That's where we play. That's where we get the, you know, we develop the most. That's where we try everything. And then you get to the world stage because you've had a good club experience, because you've had good coaches. So I think you can drive the most impact really at the club level. And we need better investment. We need more diversity in cap tables. Like the same people are owning clubs and, you know, making decisions. And do they have the right expertise and understand the women's game like we do? And which is why, you know, we obviously started the Player Investor Collective, which I know all three of you are going to join. So it's going to be great.
So we are. Let's go. Well, speaking of investment, because you already do have big names, Abby Wambach, Julie Foudy, Sue Bird, if I'm not mistaken. So can you just talk a little bit more the specifics of that and where do you envision all of this going?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really did come from understanding the space and ownership. I also felt like, you know, I was spending a lot of consulting time and giving my time for money and then making other people a ton of money. So I was like, this makes no sense. Like, why can't we have ownership? You know, we've been in the game. We know how this works. I heard you before. I heard you all before. You know what you're talking about. So why can't we have this space? But when you really look at like investment and how it works, it's very complex. It's a lot about your network. It's a lot about the structures and to have small checks in a round that you're building. That's a very large round, like, you know, above, you know, 5, 10, 15 million. If you're trying to raise money, to have people come in at a $25,000 check is very hard to manage. So we created an SPV, which is a special purpose vehicle, which basically just means that we can take smaller checks. They all come into one pot. They all come into one ticket onto our cap table. And that means like we just have to manage one thing. And that's like really the structure of it, which took me quite a long time actually to figure out, which sounds silly because it seems so obvious and probably is obvious for most people. But we wanted that opportunity for former players to be able to come in, have ownership, have a say. We have a player council so that athletes can really give their feedback and get involved. And there's a ton of different ways that I think that they can lean in and either gain experience from what we're building, like come to our clubs. If you want to see how we're building our content plan or what a match day operations look like, because you want to gain experience, because you may want to go do that somewhere else, like come hang out. If you just want to hang out and have a good party because we have a really cool investor group, awesome, totally fine. You know, if you like the merch and you just want to wear the jerseys and the swag, cool too. If you want to like lean in and build like a weekly podcast or something, that would be a great idea. Just saying for you three that are coming in to invest. So yeah, there's a lot of ways that people can kind of get involved. But the idea is really to allow ownership for people who don't have access to ownership in sports.
Bex, this is incredible. I'm literally taking notes, like nodding my head, like, yes, why wasn't this more accessible before? But I mean, it makes sense. And I think it's really special as well. Like I'm looking at all of us, all former pro players on this, you're creating a space. And we know how much little money you can make, especially just 5 years ago, but you're making it accessible for former players, not just in NWSL, but in other sports to be part of this. How important for you was that, especially looking back, just to make it open enough so that players can have an avenue to the investment and business and ownership side?
I mean, if I'm really honest, I think most businesses that work, let's just take women's football, because I think you can say also in women's volleyball or basketball or probably any sport, but like, I'll just use my experience. So in women's football, I actually think the players probably have the best perspective on how to do most things when it comes to building a club. They may not know how to run a P&L or to build like an entire budget, but they'll know how to do a content strategy. They'll know what the social media manager needs to be like filming, where they need to be, what type of content we should be doing, how to build players' brands, how to build the club brand, how we should be looking at sponsorship, like how we get partners involved. I remember when I was like at one of the agencies in London and we were talking about like women's football and how these big brands should activate and like some of the ideas from the agency. I'm like, those are just like dumb ideas. And they're like, they're not going to help the game, where you could actually, like we worked with Visa. They did the second half program. Like that was an actual program where you're educating players, right? Like that all came because I was like, this is what I think players need. This is a problem in the sport right now. This is how you could actually help because you have financial literacy, because you're like a bank and you work with banks. And so that's how we're building our commercial structure too, is like we're their solution partners. So here's all the things you could do in our clubs. There's all these problems that we have, like come in as a partner and solve this problem. And then the content and the story and the brand building is so easy. And I think players really know, they know that better than anyone else. So for me, it's like pretty obvious that players and athletes should be involved in ownership. It's not rocket science. It's like, we should be way more involved than investment bankers, you know? We should be way more involved than like tech bros, right? Like, is that not obvious?
It's really not obvious. I agree.
It's so true. And it's so refreshing listening to a former pro in the space and creating that pathway for players still in the game, youth players, academy players, and then also former players as well. I want to ask what's happening on the ground now. As a sort of former Montpellier FC now, it's changed its rebrand. I know you have a couple of clubs, so just from an investment standpoint, what's the growth that's happening there and now that Crux are doing on the ground for those clubs that you already have?
Yeah, it's a good question, because it's like, well, what are you walking? Like, what's the walk? You know, you're going to talk in. After U3 announced you're investing, we'll do that announcement. So that'll be great. And then in each of the clubs, we basically have totally stripped them out of the men's clubs. We built an entire team just focusing on the women's. Like, all of this is so obvious when I talk to Americans too. They're like, duh, what was it before? But like, we have a new president and a CEO in each of the clubs. We have a marketing person, a comms person, you know, a finance person, someone that like purely just looks at the financials of the women's club. Very not normal, totally not standard across Europe. Most of the time they share HR, they share legal, they share finance across the men's club, and don't really pull out actual costs and revenues of the women specifically. So we built that team around them. And one of the things that we did was we did like a whole fan research project. So we went out to Rosengard, which is our club in Sweden. It's in Malmo. It's really fun, so you should come. And then the other one is Montpellier, where Jen played, where she was a legend on the south coast of France. So she had a terrible time 10 minutes from the south coast of France on the beach. I know. Heard all the bad stories.
Just discovered rain in the sun. It was brilliant.
Yeah. So we did like a fan research project, and we figured out that like each of the clubs has different challenges. So Rosengard is a very historic club. It's won 14 titles. Marta's played there. Lika Martins, Caroline Sager, who's actually now our head of performance there. But actually the club has sort of been going like this for the last year. So they needed a new story. They needed a refresh. They needed to understand like, why should you be coming to the games now? Why do we need the fans? You know, who are the new players that are actually just as exciting as all the ones that left a couple of years ago? And it's sort of like reinvigorating a fan base that used to be there and kind of died, and feel like, okay, but we need to go out to the younger fan base as well. And then in Montpellier, it's crazy. We went out to the fans, and like most people don't even know there's a women's team there, which makes it even more maddening, because the owners of the club are the family called the Nicolin family, and they were the first people ever to give any contract to any female player in France. Wow. And Jean-Michel Aulas told me that, and he said Jean-Michel Aulas started Olympique Lyon women's team, obviously like the most historic team, or the best, most winningest team, I guess, in Europe. And he was like, yeah, the Nicolin family was the one that was like, let's start a women's team. So they did it. So I copied, you know, the Nicolin. So 2001, they started this club, and yet like people in the city don't know it exists. So it's a whole different, right? So like, how then do you build your content? How do you look at partners? How do you, you know, do recruitment in different ways? So finding out from data how we're going to build each of the clubs, I think, is super important. And then our investment group's quite a lot of fun too, Jen, to your second point. But I feel like I've just been talking, so I'll shut up and let you guys.
No, this is amazing. And maybe you've kind of answered this a little bit, but obviously you've been involved from a player aspect and working at FIFA now with Crux. Has there been anything that's been unexpected or more illuminating than maybe you expected, or challenging within this process?
Yeah. That's a great question. I knew that football or soccer was kind of a wild, wild west. You know, there's like, it's not that professionalized, specifically on the women's side, probably even more so than the men's. And in Europe, in some ways, less professional than in the US, because I think Americans look at sport as an entertainment product. So they sort of see it kind of differently, package it differently. I was shocked at how crazy the player contracts are and what agents are doing nowadays. It is, you guys, it's wild. Like some of these contracts that we not only took over, but are seeing from other clubs, and some of the communication that these agents are doing and like advising their players to do is like not only not
in like a good way or okay.
No, like basically some of it's illegal. You know, players don't realize that they're not allowed to just go and have conversations with any club they want. It has to be sanctioned by their current club in some ways. You know, it's not oversimplified, but you know, and their agents are taking them around and they're like lying and not sharing information with players so that they can get what they want. And so I think like the agent, the whole agent thing is kind of a wild, wild west, and there's a lack of structure. So what we've been trying to do is standardize our player contracts, because I think that not a lot of clubs have a standardized contract with standardized rules. They sort of take what agents give them. And so all the players have really totally different contracts with different bonus structures and like in and out clauses and sell on things and all these funky things. So it's taken us, I want to say like 8 months in Montpellier as our first club to really get a very good, what I think is a player contract that meets all the regulations, that isn't illegal, you know, that's making sure that we're fair, that's doing things where we're trying to incentivize everyone so they align on the same page. It's not just like incentivizing agents to go sell their players to whoever's offering the most money. So that's taken like a lot more time than I thought would, Lori, just because I feel like there's a lot less standardization and professionalism than even I had assumed in the women's game.
Wow. Well, Bex, that's incredible, because I think as players, we've all had contracts where you're like, huh, how did this come out? And you're like truly looking out for them. Yeah, it's so necessary. Last question for me. When you're looking at Crux and where it is right now and where you want it to be, what's next for you? Where do you envision this going?
Yeah. So like, did I mention you three were going to come in the Player Investor Collective? Okay. So like, step one. we have two clubs now. I think they're in like really great territories, you know. South Coast of France is a great place to be, but the French League is kind of going like that for a number of different reasons. Scandinavia is a great place to sort of be as well and to recruit from and out of. We're looking at three other clubs in three different countries. So ideally we'd get to five clubs across Europe. That's the plan. We're in an investment round now. We're in a Series A. So we're going to be closing the Player Investor Collective, or at least that first round, pretty soon here. So there's a couple more athletes that are going to be announced pretty soon. We're basically trying to build this investment round with really strategic investors. So people who have either come from sport or outside of sport, but can help us build in different ways. So some are, I don't know, like media moguls, or have built a studio in LA that is doing our documentary now. He used to run all of Unscripted at Netflix, so we're filming a documentary. Or a guy who's like an expert in YouTube, and he's like, I just want to lean in. So he's one of our investors, and he's done a whole like program for all of our social media guys on like, this is the algorithm, this is how you should do it. Fascinating stuff. So we really have a group of investors who are helping us build along the way, because I'm like, the more smart people we have that can help us build across like every single pillar that we have, the easier my life's going to be, and the more cool stuff we're going to be able to do and more innovative. So that's kind of where we're going. And we want to build some more, you know, better content. We are potentially looking at a rebrand in Rosengard. But we want people to come to our games, you know, like we want people to come over to Europe and check out the quality and enjoy the cities where we're owning these teams and watch our girls and follow them, buy the merchandise. We want to build, you know, we want to build with like really cool people. So we want to build an awesome community, whether that's our investors or our fan base or our players and the team and the staff. I think we have a good vibe. I think we have a really good culture, but I'm biased. So.
Bex, I think we can all agree you have an amazing culture. You have a great vibe. And maybe we'll come back in A3 overseas.
There we go.
I like it.
Me too. Come on. All right. Well, Bex, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. You are a busy woman, so we appreciate you taking the time to come talk to us, tell us about Crux, and you're just doing incredible things. So congratulations. We appreciate it.
You guys are awesome. I love this friggin' pod. It's so much fun. It's genuinely like the best of everything all pulled into one. So yeah, congrats on it. It's really awesome. Like, good job. Keep it up. Thank you for having me so much.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. What a machine. That's a stallion. That is a powerhouse of like international player, captain, business owner, investor, bringing in more players, empowering them. Like, I'm like, whoa, why didn't I know her when I retired? Like that's the dream, right?
Yeah, I could listen to her speak all day, and I genuinely meant it when it's so refreshing when you have a former pro that knows and gets the game and wants to actually action all of those beliefs. Mm-hmm. So really cool. And she speaks so well and so clearly of what Crux is doing. So awesome having her.
Yeah. And to be in all facets, like as you were mentioning, just as a player, but then working with FIFA, you just have like a plethora of understanding experience, which I just feel like, and it's incredible what women are doing, what Bex is doing, mm-hmm. and something that we've been screaming at the top of our lungs for so long. And now we're seeing it. So it's super cool.
Yeah. I always love talking to former players, women that know that the athletes are the experts in this and are going out of the way to empower them to be the experts, especially in their post-playing career. So shout out to Beck, shout out to Crux Football. Everybody go check it out. We're going to take a quick break and we're looking at NWSL Match Week 13 afterwards. Welcome back to Attacking Third, presented by Tylenol, the official pain reliever of the NWSL. All right, match week 13, everybody. Big game, Kansas City Current versus San Diego Wave. Top of the table with San Diego. And Kansas City coming off of a pretty big loss to Orlando Pride. When we look at Kansas City and the form that they've had, especially away from home, it's been tough. But then being home against San Diego, Lori, do you think that Kansas City are up for the challenge against the Wave and the form that they're in?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Especially because I was on that game last week against Orlando. And I think if you look at the way they conceded those three goals, they'll feel like those are things that they can clean up defensively. And you know, one of the things that Chris Armas and even all the players have talked about is there is a difference in their energy. And that's one of the areas that they're trying to correct, especially when they're away from home. But there is a difference in the energy, the intensity that they have when they're playing in front of their home fans. And I think that's felt from the opposition as well. So it's something that San Diego will no doubt be mindful of. But I do think they'll be ready to respond after that loss against Orlando, but then also have that little extra motivation in front of their home fans as well.
But Jen, when we're looking at this team, I mean, with San Diego, they've lost Eugenia to an injury. She's out for the rest of the season. Do you think that they've really stepped up with her being out and still kind of maintained that same aggressive goal scoring style that she brought the team? And do you think that they can do it away against Kansas City?
I think they'll have seen Kansas City's press against Orlando. And I think how good technically the Wave are, I would feel confident. You know, hopefully if they, obviously they'll be working on it, so they'll be tighter going from what Lori said. But no, I think Barcenas has really stepped up and her mm-hmm. goals recently have been brilliant. But I think a player of her caliber is always going to be missed first and foremost, especially when it's a longer term injury. But I think players have stepped up to answer it. And again, coming off of different results for both teams, I think this is, you know, a potential playoff game that both teams are expected to get to that point in the season. So both teams will want to prove a point and actually, you know, work towards that latter part in the season. But both teams feel up and down for me. So this is another big head-to-head to, again, prove to everyone that they are, you know, potentially a championship-winning team.
Yeah, it's one of those matches where let's see what you're made of. Kansas City at home against San Diego Wave. Another big game, we have Denver Summit against Portland Thorns. And Lindsay Heaps gets her first potential game back with Denver Summit against her old team, Portland Thorns, where she won championships. She was a standout player. She beat my team in a final, literally leading the Portland Thorns over us. How excited, Lori, are you that Lindsay Heaps is officially back and we'll potentially see her get minutes in a Denver Summit kit?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, Sam Kerr's back last night. That was amazing. Lindsay Heap's back after a number of years being away. And it's fun in the sense that, the cream of, okay, I was about to say some analogy, but I don't even know actually how to say. So I'm like,
oh,
you know, I was going to say,
what were you going to say? Because that would have been too.
Dude has left the show. This is what I get for joking with you. Okay.
Karma.
I think the cherry on the top. What is Jen going to say? Hold on. Just say it.
Oh, I just feel like the three of us get into this comfort zone with each other. And it's like three mates talking. And it's like some of the stuff that comes out is like not okay for a live podcast.
Dee just left. She was like, I'm out of here. I cannot.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, I got a plane.
As Dee would say, please don't clip this and erase it if you get it.
I'm so sad that you caught yourself talking because it was
I was like, whoa, is anything going to actually come out? Okay, the cherry on the top is that Lindsay Heaps is in Denver, but this is an expansion team that has had some ups and downs throughout this season, but I would say for the most part, they have been cruising along for a team, you know, that essentially came together in January. And so I love what she's, what I think that she's going to be able to add to this team, which is just a variation in the attack. A lot of what they do goes through Yasmin Ryan, which is, she's been excellent, and her ability to take on 1v1. But now I think that frees her up as well, because you have experience of Lindsay Heaps, you have her ability to kind of control the tempo in there, another added piece in the midfield that just makes this attack more potent. And that is one of the things that Nick Cushing has talked about too, is just adding more players that understand the league. And this matchup in particular is going to be interesting because it's Lindsay Heap's former team with Portland. So there should be a little added fun incentive there. But yeah, to have her caliber, one of the captains of the U.S. Women's National Team, her winning mentality. But again, everything that I said, I think it frees up even more players like Yasmin and Ryan, who've already kind of led the charge. And this season, I think gives them another bit of a nuance in that final third that maybe has been missing consistently throughout the season for a new team.
Yeah, I think she's going to provide a lot of service to their front three, which is something that they've needed. And why we see, that was such a good point, why we see Yaz Ryan coming inside so much to pick up the ball. And instead of letting her be isolated, go 1v1 and score some more bangers. God damn, that was such a good goal last week. Yes. Jim, when we look at Portland, though, they're coming off of a massive loss. They lost in the Cascadia rivalry to Seattle. Seattle needed those points and those goals. But do you think Portland's just going to bounce back from that, and that was just a blip, and they're up for the challenge in Denver?
Well, yeah, it's hard. Like, Cascadian rival always brings out this extra physicality because it's such a big rivalry, and that's what rivalries do. I think it's important to park the emotions of that one and just look at it logically of what they got right and what they got wrong. And I feel like I talk about the press a lot, but I loved Seattle's press again. I thought Meza was so good in the midfield, staying so well connected. So for me, for Portland, it's about varying their play from out the back, like not trying to overplay at the back, because Seattle were just really good at pressing it and breaking them down in that area of the pitch and winning it high up. So Portland, for me, just need to understand going into this game against Denver, it might be different, it might be a little more open, and park it. You've just played a massive rival, huge loss, so it's whether they do bounce back or not, they have to mentally, because it's going to be a completely different game. And the form they were in at the start of the season, they just need to find that again. And for me, that came from consistency up top. So
yeah,
with a player like Wilson, you always know that you can create at any point. So they will always have that. But for me, they spent too much time on the ball at the back. That's where they lost it. Mm. It's about sometimes being a little bit more direct and varying it up. So it's just those elements of the play that I think they can benefit from playing against a team like Denver.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, another big game we're going to go around the grounds is Royals versus Pride. Now, Pride coming off of a loss from Boston last night. Olivieri scores a goal and Orlando unable to get anything on the scoreboard. What's not clicking for Orlando, Lori? Because this has been a very inconsistent side. They have a convincing performance, then a very unconvincing performance. They've just really struggled. But then we can also say that for Royals since the break.
Yeah, I would say, I know this is the one thing I was most curious about with the Royals in terms of having this longer break in the middle of the season. Does it kind of deter your momentum that you've had, or does it give you the necessary break than to like kind of regroup. It is, it feels like it's gone a little bit the opposite way in the way they wouldn't for Utah, but still plenty of time. I would say this Orlando team is, I think it's as much of a mystery for them as it is for all of us, because you look around and they put in a wonderful team performance in terms of how Marta showed up and really brought everybody together in their last game against Kansas City. They, in large parts, nullified the attack for Kansas City and kept Shawinga quiet when she came on. But I think you have to give credit to Boston, because much like we've been talking about for Denver, even though the first part of the season was kind of shaky, they get Lily real. They're starting to come together. It does take time. That's one of the things. And they are combative. They are going to go after teams. They want to win. They're going to make it difficult. And they're not afraid of any opponent regardless. So I think that sometimes is where I feel like with Orlando, the question is like, are they're going to compete? No doubt. But there has to be different players. And when Ben is not in the starting lineup consistently, then that is a huge missing piece for them to be able to go a little bit more direct, to alleviate some of the pressure. And that means everybody has to be on point. And when that's not the case, then you find yourself in an inconsistent form. And I think that's what we're seeing with Orlando right now, still trying to shake out exactly what their identity is without Banda always in the starting lineup.
Yeah, another game of let's see what you're made of with both of these sides. All right, Gotham versus Seattle. Another big game on the weekend. Seattle coming off the massive win over Portland in Cascadia rivalry, and Gotham coming off a big win against Washington Spirit in the Queens Classic. Jen, who do you got for this matchup?
I mean, Gotham must be on a hype after that win. The adrenaline of you know, record crowd in New York. We haven't even, I can't believe we've done an entire podcast without mentioning Lavelle's goal as well. I
don't know. That was incredible.
You're brilliant. That was one of the best goals I've seen this season easily so far. So they have to be on a high and know that Seattle are going to come after it. The way that they played against Portland was great. I'm still going to favor Gotham the way that they just beat one of the best teams in the league. I'm a, you know, Spirit of it, it's such an attacking force. They managed to nullify it, so credit to Gotham. They should be on a high and absolutely take this into this weekend.
Yeah, Seattle are going to have to do something very special to break through that Gotham defense and Anne-Katrine Berger. All right, everybody. Well, this was Attacking Third. We will be back Sunday at 9 p.m. after the Boston Legacy and Washington Spirit match, of course, to give you reaction analysis and our team of the week. Thank you so much for joining us, whether you're here on the pod, live on YouTube, or on Galazzo Network. We appreciate it. From Jen, Lori, Phil, and Audrey, I'm Darian. This was A3. Podcasts.